Hello, welcome to the Loney Show. I'm your host, John Maloney. And in this episode, I've not brought some regulars because they're busy as always. But as my guest, he's from Victorville, Connecticut. He is a New York Times best-selling author, keynote public speaker, and a chief vision officer for an internet website, a website company, Access B. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Michael Hingson.
Thank you for letting me.
Anytime. So, how's life?
You know, life is good. It's even warm over here in the States today where I live in California. In the winter, it gets cold. It's warming up. What more can a body ask for?
That's so true. And you doing much recently?
Picking up with the pandemic, I have not been doing as much traveling and speaking, but over the past year especially, I have been doing work, as you mentioned, for Accessibee, which is a company that creates products to help make websites accessible for people with a variety of different kinds of disabilities. One of the things Accessibee asked me to do was to start a podcast. And so, not competing with you, but we have a podcast called Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. So we're having a lot of fun with that as well.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So how did you get started as being an author?
So for me, the story is that I think if you summarize it, it would be who would have thought. So 21 years ago, I lived in New Jersey, worked in New York City for a computer company that made products that were used to back up computer data over networks. And we chose to open our office on the 78th floor of Tower 1 of the World Trade Center, which we did. And of course, on September 11th, 2001, everything changed. We were doing some seminars that day to teach people how to sell our products. But the terrorist attacks clearly changed all of that. I got very visible in the media after that all occurred and began a career in public speaking rather than selling computers. So now, instead of selling computer hardware and technology, I was selling philosophy and attitudes and talking about trust and teamwork, dealing with fear, moving on from September 11th, talking about the human-animal bond because I use a guide dog and the guide dog was with me in the World Trade Center. And in 2010, someone called me, a woman named Susie Flory, who was writing a book to talk about different kinds of dogs. Sorry about that. So a woman called me, her name was Susie Flory. She called to tell me that she was writing a book called Dog Tales, which was going to be 17 stories about dogs. And she had heard about my guide dog in the World Trade Center, Thunder, Roselle, and wanted to include her story. So I told her my story, and then she said, well, you really ought to write your own book. She did, however, include Roselle's story in her book, but she said, you ought to write a book, and I'd like to help. I know an agent, and so on. We had worked toward writing a book for several years before then. It actually started in 2002 when the publisher of the AKC, American Kennel Club Gazette, suggested that I write a book. And so literally for 8 years, I'd been taking notes and writing down memories. Anyway, Susie Flory and I began a process to create a proposal. We sent it to her agent, Chip McGregor, who loved it. Within a week, we had a book contract signed and wrote Thunder Dog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust, which was published on officially August 2nd, 2011, and in its first week out was a New York Times bestseller, and then it became a number one New York Times bestseller for a little while.
Wow, amazing. And have you have any plans on writing any more books in the future?
So in 2013 into 2014, we published self-published a book called Running with Roselle, which was a little bit more for kids, talking about my growing up as a blind person and Roselle growing up and becoming a guide dog. But during the pandemic specifically, I started to realize that while I had talked a lot about escaping the World Trade Center, how I did it, what I did, I had never really developed any material teaching people how to do the things that I did, specifically how to deal with an unexpected situation like that, especially a situation that could be very terrifying, and control your fear and not be terrified about it. And it didn't have anything to do with blindness. It had to do with adopting and creating a mindset that indicated that in the case of an emergency, you could survive, you could move on, you could escape, or at least have the best opportunity to escape. So rather than, as I put it, being blinded by fear that was overwhelming and not allowing me to make a decision, I had done things that allowed me to be able to focus and more actively be a participant in leaving the building and helping others do the same thing. So I began actually working with Susie Flory again, but she didn't have the time. She's in a PhD program. So she introduced me to a colleague, Carrie Wyatt Kent, and Carrie and I began creating a proposal for a new book. And I had thought about calling it Blinded by Fear or Not Being Blinded by Fear, but Carrie came up with a better title, and it's the one we're going to use, at least as a working title for now, because most of my life is really in one way or another connected to dogs, especially guide dogs. I am now using my 8th guide dog, Alamo, who is a black lab. I got my first guide dog, Squire, in 1964. So the new book working title is A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave. And what we're going to do is to talk about fear. We're going to talk to people about how they can learn to control fear and use fear as a powerful tool and a positive tool rather than just being overwhelmed by it, not knowing what to do. So we'll be working on that for the next little while, and it'll be published as soon as we can.
Okay. And were you born blind, or did you become blind later on in your life?
Depends on what you mean by later on in my life. I was born 2 months premature and put in an incubator and given too much oxygen. So within a very few hours of the time I was born, my retinas underwent change and didn't evolve correctly or grow correctly. And so basically I've been blind since birth. But if you want to be really technical, it was within hours after birth. But yeah, basically I think it's fair to say I was born blind.
Okay.
However, having a master's degree in physics, I love to be technical. So what can I say? But yeah, it would be most relevant to say born blind.
Cool. Fair enough. So as a public speaker, what kind of things do you talk about?
Couple things to say. One, people could visit my website, michaelhingson.com, michaelhingson.com, where we have a number of speaking topic suggestions. But things I talk about are, some speech titles include Turning the Tables on Terrorism, Trust and Teamwork. One of my favorites, especially over the past few years, has been moving from diversity to inclusion. Because when people talk about diversity, disabilities are not involved in that discussion typically. We are more involved with and can't be left out of inclusion, because either you are inclusive or you're not. Partially inclusive doesn't make you inclusive. So that has become a fun topic to talk about. I have a speech entitled Labrador Lessons, which talks about working with a guide dog. And all of these speeches include typically in one way or another me telling my story of what happened on September 11th. So I talk about September 11th and use it as a springboard to go into other areas. I have a speech called Ethics, the Real Bottom Line. And another one of my favorites is Thinking Inside the Box, Your Inner Toolbox, that is. You can't think outside the box until you learn to use your own inner tools to think inside your box. So a number of different speech topics.
Okay, interesting. Now, what was life for you growing up?
You know, it really was a pleasant thing. When it was discovered that I was blind, the doctors in Chicago, Illinois, where I was born, told my parents they should send me away to a home for handicapped children, because no blind child could ever grow up to be a productive member in society. My parents rejected that outright and said, of course he can grow up to do whatever he chooses to do. So I was brought up being very confident that blindness wasn't going to be a problem for me. There were challenges for my first few years in school. I didn't have access to Braille material, so had to study and learn in other ways, getting help from parents. My father worked with me on math. He was an electronics and electrical engineer. I was doing algebra in my head by the time I was six. I had my mom helping me in reading out loud, reading assignments with spelling, helping with spelling tests and so on. So I kept up, but it wasn't until the fourth grade that we really had a teacher who could assist in properly learning Braille and some of the other things that led to having the appropriate skills that I really needed to have. I was accepted in classrooms, or maybe tolerated, I guess, to a degree, but I tended to get good high grade point averages. So a lot of people sometimes ask me for help with homework. And then I also was very interested in science and so had a few radio kits. My father and I became amateur radio operators when I was 14. He could have done it anytime, but he wanted to wait for me. I got my first guide dog at the age of 14 when I went into high school. And again, I probably wasn't as active socially as some, but I love to read. I love to participate in school and think that I did fine. And then at the age of 18, went to college at the University of California at Irvine. And as I said, eventually attained a master's degree in physics and a secondary high school teaching credential.
Okay. Nice. Nice. What's your favorite life hack?
Oh, gosh. You know, I plain love life in general. I like doing a lot of things in the world. I think for me, if there were something that I really had to call a favorite thing that I like to do and be involved with, it's reading, learning. Doing the podcast that we do has been very educational for me. I've gotten the opportunity to meet a number of unusual people and not so unusual people who didn't think they had stories to tell, but really do. And as I like to say, if I can't learn more from a guest than they learn from me, or when I travel and do a public speech, if I can't learn more than they learn, then I'm not doing my job well. So I really love to learn.
Great, great. If you had to get rid of a holiday, which one would you get rid of?
Any holiday, if I had to get rid of a holiday, it would be tough. The ones I'd probably get rid of are probably already gotten rid of over here in California. We had State Constitution Day and September 9th when I was growing up, and it's gone. But I guess I think really, if I had to deal with holidays, I think that in the U.S. we probably should have more. We don't have that many holidays. I think some of our holidays have been forgotten in terms of their meanings. Labor Day, nobody remembers why we have that over here. Memorial Day, most people don't recognize. We recognize it as a holiday, but we forget the meanings of them. So for me, I kind of really don't want to get rid of a holiday. I really think that there are a few that we should add, because I think over here we don't emphasize people relaxing enough and taking time to sit and think about life. We don't reflect very well over here, which is unfortunate.
Yes, of course. What's the best way to start the morning?
Waking up. I think the best way to start the morning is to get up, or even before I get up, I'll thank God that we have another day, that I get to experience another day. I believe life is a journey, but I believe it's an adventure. And I love to wake up just thinking about what's going to happen today. What kind of new adventures do I get to experience? What do I get to learn today? And I'm serious that I like to and really believe that we should adopt that kind of an attitude. We choose to go to work. Yeah, we have to do it to earn an income, but we generally get to choose where we work. And so we should make the best of it. We should find ways to enhance our lives through the work that we do. And if we really don't like something that well, then we need to change our mindsets. And if we have to change our jobs, do it. But overall, I'd rather wake up and just think, whatever is happening, what's the adventure going to be today?
I like that. I like that. Do you have any pets?
Any pets?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure who has whom. We have a cat, and she owns the house. Just ask her. She is over 12. And then I, as I mentioned before, use a guide dog. So he's not really a pet, but we have a very close relationship, and he's over here on his bed in my office, wondering when he gets some attention. So we have a dog and a cat here in the house.
Okay, that's great. How much time do you spend on the internet?
Well, if you were to ask how much time do I spend on the computer in the course of the day, most of it, because I use the computer as a tool to accomplish different things, whether it's composing documents, reading information, and so on. And so from that, how much time do I spend on the internet? Again, most of it is work, but I would say several hours a day because it's kind of a necessity. And for me, it's the way of getting access to information that you might get through newspapers or printed material and so on. For me, the internet or the computer with software that interacts and gives me either a braille display or verbal display of whatever the computer screen is showing, that's how I get the information. So I'm on the computer a lot and find it very helpful to be able to do. It is a tool. I don't do a lot of social media. I do some, but not a lot. I wouldn't even say an hour a day because that's not necessarily the most productive use of my time in general. But on the computer and on the internet, lots.
Okay. Interesting. That's cool. What was the strangest dream you've had?
Oh, let's see. I never had survivor's remorse or any regrets about being in the World Trade Center. So I have never had nightmares about that. But I remember one night having a dream that I got partway down the stairs and remembered I forgot something in my office and had to go back up to the office and get it, which I did, and then was coming down the stairs and the building was shaking again. And then I woke up and I wasn't scared, but it was kind of strange. And then the other dream I had was that for some strange reason, my entrance to the World Trade Center was located outside the house I grew up with and inside in Palmdale, California. And I could walk out my front door and go right to the stairs and climb up to my office. And that was as weird a dream as I've ever had. But I've never had nightmares about it and don't need to and feel that my life took the courses that it did in large part due to choice. So I don't have regrets, but again, I regard life as an adventure. So even with the weird dreams, it's the kind of strange way to get to the World Trade Center. But if I could do it from my house in Palmdale, why not? Short commute.
Absolutely. Yeah, why not? Short commute. If your mind was an island, what would it look like?
Well, it's tough. I imagine a lot. But if my mind were an island, I think it would be generally a place where a lot of things are stored in an orderly way, but also there would be places where there is constant shifting, whether it's a beach or trees blowing in breezes and so on. There would be quiet places where I like to go just to sit and think. But most of it would probably be a pretty organized, maybe you could say department store at the beginning of a day, or a library when no books have been checked out yet for the day. So everything is in its place.
Okay. Nice.
least I'd like to think that's the way it works out.
Okay, cool, cool. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I can only go by the places that I've been to. So, for example, I've not been to the UK, but would love to. I've been to Ireland, but not the UK. But of the places where I have been, I really loved being in New Zealand. I enjoyed it a lot. So that would be one place I'd love to visit the UK, and we have relatives there. It would be fun to be there, and that might be a fun place to live. Working now for Accessibe, it's an Israeli company, and people tell me a lot of positive things and wonderful reasons to live in Israel, and I have not been there yet. But I've got to say, I think if I were to really talk about where I'd like to be in the world, it would have to be somewhere that, where there would be a city or cities close by and a lot of the kinds of things I'm used to. And it's a selfish reason for saying that, because my wife happens to be in live in a wheelchair. She's been in a chair her whole life. And I know that if we lived out in the middle of the desert, that would probably be pretty inconvenient. So probably being closer to a city somewhere is where we would like to be.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually a really good, interesting choice. I like that. Where was the most beautiful place you've been?
In the world? I think I would have to say the most beautiful place in the world. Well, certainly one of the most beautiful places I've been from a standpoint of atmosphere and flowers and such things is Hawaii. And again, for me, another would be New Zealand. I really loved being there. We were there for 3 weeks doing speaking, but it's been, 19 years now. Loved Hawaii and loved New Zealand from a standpoint of beauty and spirit and environment. Those would certainly be two places that I would call some of the most beautiful where I've been.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. If you could erase one past experience, what would it be?
Well, of course, if I could truly erase an experience, and it would erase it for everyone, it would have to be September 11th and what happened on that day. Of course, my life would change a lot, but I would want to erase that. I would want to bring those people back and see that whole thing go away. It was a horrible day. It's a day that didn't need to have happened. And if we truly erase that experience, then we have to erase some of the bad things surrounding it. And that would be a good thing too.
Okay. What was the biggest risk you've ever taken?
For me, I think the biggest risk I've taken, well, a couple. One, to me, it was a big risk. For a lot of people, it wouldn't be, but my first job out of college caused me to literally move across the country to a place where I had never been before, where I knew no one, and start a new job. Being blind, that gets to be something that includes more challenges, because I needed to quickly establish a network to get help in learning where things were around where I lived, much less how to get to the job and so on. I think the other would be that I have taken jobs with some startup companies or companies that were developing bleeding edge and very leading edge technologies, and Accessibe is one of them. And the risk to me was not so much in taking the job and that the company was a startup, but because the products were very new and revolutionary. And in the case of Accessibe, still are. They have, however, and I've been a part of it, proven their worth, and we're continuing to grow. But still, there's always a risk when you're starting to work with a product that really is based on new concepts that most people don't understand or really know a lot about. But I've had the honor of doing that, and it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, nice. What was the weirdest nickname you were given?
My middle name is Blizzard. I was born during a snowstorm in Chicago. So if you're familiar with the game Hangman, it's a great game and a great word to use in Hangman. But I like the game. I like my middle name. I'm happy with it. But it's definitely an unusual name. I don't know anyone else with the last name or middle name of Blizzard.
Cool.
But I'm good with it.
Yeah, that's nice. Which recent news story have you found most interesting?
Recent news stories, I would have to say, the problem in your question is interesting because there are a number that I find not so fun, but I think the most interesting story that I have been kind of following of late is what's going on in the Ukraine. The people in Ukraine were given no chance of having any success in a war that they didn't start, that should never have happened, and that the world needs to even address in a stronger way. But it's been fascinating to see the people of Ukraine and how they have not only stood up to a tyrannical maggot, and if he doesn't like that, it's too bad, but that they've not only stood up to him, but they're succeeding. It reminds me of, you know, the American Revolution and anyone who's been downtrodden who overcomes adversity and overwhelming odds. And of course, there, as a person who is blind, I tend to face a lot of that every day. People don't think blind people, even today, can be nearly as productive and as functional as they can be. The unemployment rate in most of the major countries of the world is for employable blind people is in the 65 to 70% range. And it's not because we can't work, it's because people think we can't work. It's prejudice. No one thought Ukraine could do what they're doing. And it is an absolute fascinating story and an object lesson to follow.
I absolutely agree. Because no matter how bad things get, things will get better. And and the people of Ukraine are certainly going through that. And they will actually win this war eventually.
Hopefully, well, I think they're already doing a good job of it, but you're right. They will win this war. And it's very important to understand why, because they're motivated to, they understand what freedom is about, and they understand and appreciate their own self-worth. And that's great.
Absolutely. It's great to hear that and see it. What is the best pair of shoes you own?
The best pair of shoes?
Yep.
I guess I've had a pair of Rockport shoes that have been very comfortable, and I wear them a lot just because they are, and I've had them for a long time. They've lasted really well, and that's part of it. But they've been the best because they've been comfortable. I can stand in them. And I also have a pair of Florsheim dress shoes. I put some inner soles in them, but they also have been very comfortable, especially when I'm in an environment where I'm doing public speeches and I'm on my feet or whatever. They're very comfortable for me. And so they have to be better than shoes I've had in the past.
Okay, cool. And I guess that's all we have for this episode. It was great having you here, Michael. Talking about your work with AccessB, your experiences with 9/11, and it's been amazing. Thanks.
Well, thank you. If people want to learn more about AccessB, because they want to make sure their website becomes accessible, they can visit www.accessibe.com. And as I said, people are welcome to go to my website. They can read there about our podcast, but they can read about speaking ideas. And if anyone is looking for someone to speak virtually, or preferably I'd love to come visit, they can go to michaelhinkson.com and learn all about the speaking process and so on there. And I'd love to hear from people.
Okay, great. And until next time, stay tuned for more.